Before we dive into this interview, a quick note that registration for the spring cycle of my brand new creative incubator, Kiln, is only open for a few more days through this Saturday, April 20th, to be exact. If you haven't heard me talk about it yet, Kiln is a catalyst and a sacred container and a community for building fire and momentum around your creative ideas. And I think it's really going to be such a fun and energizing and transformative space. So if joining is of interest to you, you can learn more and book your spot at jkg.co/kiln, K-I-L-N. And if it is past April 20th, by the time you listen to this, know that there will be upcoming cycles of Kiln later this summer, as well as in the fall. You can share your email on the Kiln website to be notified when future cycles open. So once again, for more information, that's jkg.co/kiln. I'm Jocelyn K. Gly, and this is Hurry Slowly, a podcast about creativity and consciousness. My guest today is Cody Cookparrott, a person who, like me, does a lot of thinking about creativity and consciousness and spirit and what it means to be a wholehearted person living in a world that likes to put us in little boxes, be that the box of a personal brand, the box of your social media persona, the box of quote-unquote person who is productive, the box of gender, and so on and so on. And we're going to be opening up and unpacking some of those boxes today, talking about what it would look like to move through the world and our creative practice with a bit more freedom and fluidity. We will be talking about how we might kind of bust through this catch-22 of being a person who makes a living from their creations and exists as, for better or worse, an online entity or persona. How do you make a living from that without becoming ensnared in that identity such that you can't evolve or change in the ways that feel like a necessary part of your creative growth? And I hope this doesn't sound too abstract as a concept, because I think it is something that is really familiar to most of us. I can't tell you how many folks I have talked to who listen to the podcast or who I've done energy work with or who've taken one of my courses who feel like, you know, after years, they've really established themselves as a go-to person or even an expert within a certain realm. You know, in other words, the outside world now perceives them as having this specific persona, which is good at delivering a specific thing, let's say productivity advice or marketing copy, for example. But now they feel like they are being called to something different. But they are also, with good reason, scared of messing with this established persona that supports their livelihood. But they don't want to be ignoring this new calling and stagnating creatively or spiritually, right? And I think a lot of us feel that sense of being caught between capitalism and being a whole human, right? How do you navigate that with any modicum of grace and maybe even success? So these are some of the questions that I'm going to dig into with Cody today. And I'm not saying we'll arrive at any definitive answers, but we will take a deep dive into these challenges and hopefully surface some new perspectives, ideas, reflections for you to consider as you contemplate your own role as a creative human, as a personal brand, as a person who wants to grow and to evolve. But before we do, a little more backstory on my guest, Cody Cookparrott, whose work I have followed for many years now and who I am really excited to connect with for the first time in person today. Cody is a dancer and a writer who was formerly known as Marley Grace. Their work focuses on the self-devotion ritual, creativity, and art making. They host the wonderful Common Shapes podcast, which is about practices and systems and rituals for a creative life. They publish a very thoughtful Substack newsletter called Monday Monday, and they teach a variety of online courses about everything from quilt making to book writing. And they've also published two books, including Getting to Center, Pathways for Finding Yourself Within the Great Unknown, as well as How to Not Always Be Working. I feel a lot of resonance between our various preoccupations as writers and as teachers, so I'm really curious to see what emerges from our conversation today. Let's dive in. Cody, welcome to Hurry Slowly.
Thank you so much. I am just delighted to be here.
I'm delighted to have you. I am very interested to talk to you today about the self and the evolution of our creative selves and how that intersects with and potentially clashes with being a person who needs to exist online and run a business and pay rent or your mortgage, and this kind of tension between the need to both establish yourself and then to evolve as a self. And I know you're particularly interested in this idea of the self. In fact, your bio explicitly says that your work focuses on the self, among other things. So I wanted to start with that word and that idea, the self. When you say that your work as a writer, as a dancer, as an artist focuses on the self, what do you mean by that? What are you interested in exploring?
It's so funny to start here because I'm sort of in this phase of like wanting to sort of decenter the self from my work a little bit. And, you know, so much of my work is personal essays and that I write in my weekly newsletter. And, you know, I think in general, to me, like, I really see looking at the self as a pathway to looking at the collective and starting with, you know, my own rituals and care for my own mind, body, heart, spirit. But at the same time, and it's so funny, when you were sort of introing this question, you used the words like the need to be online, like the need to be in a digital space. And I've been sort of in this other phase of like asking myself, like, is there a world in which I could actually not be online at all? And it certainly isn't a current world, but so I am asking myself these questions of like selfhood and how they relate to digital space and work. And yeah, maybe we'll get into this, but I live on 5 acres of land and I can have a farm stand. And so I've been dreaming of having like a quilt shop farm stand and retiring from the internet. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, I'm a little tired of thinking about the self right now. Maybe that's where I stand today.
Interesting. Well, we'll see how that unfolds for this line of questioning.
Perfect.
But it very much resonates for me. I have a kind of internet acquaintance friend who was coming to mind as you were saying that, who was someone who really had built up a business around a personal brand and then was able to cultivate another line of work. It wasn't offline. It was still digital, but was able to just kind of be like, you know what? I'm just going to retire as a personal brand. Like, I have this other thing I do over here and, you know, I'm doing okay with that. And so I'm just going to retire in that way. And there was something very appealing to me about, you know, kind of being able to shrug off that coil of the personal brand. Yeah, so I think we'll dig into that a little bit more in a few moments. But I wanted to begin with, a few months ago in January, you changed your name in a very public and professional way. I mean, I think out of necessity as someone who exists in the digital world. And I think for anyone who had been closely following your work, it probably felt like the culmination of a journey that we were witnessing unfolding over time through your writing, or at least that's how it felt to me as a reader of your newsletter. And it definitely sounds like on the personal side, it was the culmination of a kind of slow behind the scenes shift in, you know, what your friends were calling you and how you were showing up and how you were maybe identifying from a gender perspective. And I have a few questions like I want to kind of get into about, you know, the arc of that evolution, how it felt. But my first question is, if you had to pick one word to describe the feeling of having changed your name, how it feels in your body and in your presence, what would it be? And before you answer, I just want to clarify for any listeners who are wondering about consent that Cody and I checked in before this interview and they said they were comfortable talking about their name change.
The word that is coming to mind is chrysalis, which I'm like, I'm trying to think that's like right before the butterfly comes out. Is that true? Yeah. Which it feels like the butterfly has emerged. So maybe, but it's like, it kind of, I get little like chills, like the feeling is almost the before. So yeah, chrysalis is the word that I'll choose.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's like a nourishing, holding container for transformation. I like that.
Yeah, but it's like after the cocoon, you know, it's like the cocooning is complete. I'm about to emerge. Yeah, yeah.
So, but still about to emerge. That's interesting.
I know, which I guess I have technically emerged, but it feels, it's still revealing itself in many ways. So maybe that's why. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, some of my interest in this question about renaming oneself is kind of specific and personal. I talked about it in my podcast a few years ago about how I was thinking about changing my name and moving to New Mexico and kind of rebooting my life. And I was in this sort of like light it all on fire, you know, kind of moment. And then I sort of calmed down and the urgency of that passed. And I ended up rooting into where I live in Woodstock in a really nourishing way. And the urge to change my name sort of quieted for a time. But interestingly, due to a certain string of events, that name change is kind of coming back up for reconsideration again. So I'm sitting with it right now. And I want to expand out in a minute to kind of talking more about the sort of professional layer of this. But I'm curious how you're thinking about your name change, just kind of in this idea of like the arc of your personhood. I know that when I was reflecting on changing my name a few years ago, I was thinking about this idea of archiving the self. Like, was it really possible to kind of archive that old version of me and put it on a shelf and really start fresh? Like, is that a thing you can do? And to clarify for context, for me, the idea of the name change wasn't explicitly about gender. All that was maybe a strand of it. So I'm going to be clear about that. But I was and kind of am thinking about it from a perspective of, can it be a way, or not even a way, but maybe a signifier of an intention that I'm cracking out of this Jocelyn shell and into something more expansive and fluid, which is very like chrysalis language, which is kind of interesting. So that's kind of what's been churning in my brain about names and reinvention. And I'm curious, what metaphors are you using as you think about your new name and this kind of evolution of the self or the arc of the self?
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of, I do like the like visual of the shelf, of like putting something on the shelf. And, you know, I don't know, I've been teaching myself to garden, and in this like really haphazard way where I basically just like throw flower seeds in these garden boxes and these raised beds. And that's a little bit of the metaphor, is sort of like like begin before you're ready is really coming up for me. And I really, really relate to the like, I mean, it was years of using Cody as a nickname and having these moments of like extreme urgency and being like, I'm so uncomfortable. Like I have to change my name right now. And then it would sort of pass and I really wouldn't feel it as much. And I'd be sort of comfortable using Marley or, you know, I started using Mar. Mar was always a nickname, but like sort of started using it when I was teaching and in the Zoom room. And, you know, that sort of helped some of the gender stuff. But really when it came down to the shift, like so many shifts in my life around like money or alcohol or whatever it is like it becomes so unbearable that like it just had to change. Like it, like I started hearing people say Marley and it like even when it comes out of my own mouth, it's not like bad or horrible, but it's just like this feeling of not knowing who that is anymore. And so, yeah, I feel like with the gardening metaphor, it is really this like, you know, I feel like people always sort of said to me, like, you just kind of figure it out as you go. And that felt really frustrating to me. I was like, that's not enough information. But I'm really finding that it is like you kind of just make it up and you kind of put seeds in dirt. Like there are some more steps, but you kind of put the seeds in the dirt and then you kind of wait. You know, that's talk about hurry slowly. It's like you kind of like then have to wait for them to like come up. And then after that, you have to wait for the flower. And yeah, so there's definitely some planting and some waiting and some blooming. That's all been happening.
Yeah, it's interesting. What's coming up for me as I listen to you is this idea of, you know, not knowing what it is in advance and it being in this case, you know, you or me, right? Like not knowing exactly what the evolution is and kind of just having to trust and step into it. And it's making me think about this quote from Caroline Mace that I really like from Anatomy of the Spirit, where she talks about intuition and how intuition is really about the universe. You know, the universe doesn't really care about your comfort. It wants you to learn things. Yeah. And so if we define the way that we relate to intuition in relation to wanting security, then it's really difficult to relate to it or to trust it in any way because sort of by its nature, the universe is always going to sort of move us into situations that are uncomfortable in order to, you know, facilitate some kind of change or transformation. I'm curious how that lands for you.
Yeah. I think that I wanted to feel like, I think I was definitely waiting to feel comfortable in some way, like to feel more ready. Like personally, I felt ready for the name change. You know, if I like worked at a coffee shop or something and didn't have Marley Grace as the personal brand, I would have probably changed it 2.5 years ago. But I was so scared and uncomfortable. I think especially around having my name on books and just how many copies of those books exist and just feeling like this is so stupid. Like, how could I do this to this business, you know, this business that I've built for over a decade? And the universe made it really clear there wasn't going to be like a clear entrance of like, and now it will be comfortable. It's like, there's no such thing as like my name disappearing off of 40,000 copies of a book sold and my new name being on them. That it will continue to exist in people's houses with my old name on them. And I had to just sort of be okay with that. And yeah, the story is that, you know, I started grad school and I was at the first day of grad school and I was like, I cannot tell these people that my name is Marley because it's not anymore. And so I'm really grateful for that experience of being in a room with people who had maybe one of them knew who I was, but like pretty much nobody in that room knew who the hell Marley Grace was. And that was such a blessing because that it often follows me into creative spaces. And so it was just really cool that I sort of had this like anonymity in the space. So I could just be like, I'm Cody. And people were like, hi, Cody. And there was no like fumbling or forgetting because they didn't know me by another name.
Well, I'm curious because I think that, you know, many people listening are probably not, you know, necessarily contemplating a name change per se, but I do think that almost everyone can relate to the idea of feeling called to change, to reinvent themselves in some way, particularly as a creative person, as an artist, or someone running a business, and then this sense of feeling beholden to what they've already created. Mm-hmm. You know, and it may not be the name that you're beholden to, but a certain kind of being known for something, like you write a book on a certain topic and then it does well. And then people want you to write more about that topic, or, you know, you create art in a certain style and then people just want you to create art in that style, or you become an expert, you know, or a social media person who comments in a certain domain. And then you feel like you have to stay in that domain or risk losing your audience. So I think a lot of us feel that bind to a certain degree. Like I became sort of affiliated with the productivity space and that started to feel really limiting to me. And then in 2019, I kind of came out of the spiritual closet on my podcast and started talking about, you know, another realm of things related to energy and spirituality and consciousness. And I'm kind of curious how that tension has showed up for you as your creative path has unfolded and like how you think about that tension between being beholden to, you know, what you've already created or those, you know, personas that people get attached to and that you get attached to as well, you know?
Yeah, I'm thinking, I mean, this sort of reminds me of my like initial sort of feeling of like, I don't want to be thinking about the self anymore. And mm-hmm. I think it was sort of part of my decision to go back to school too. I think I wanted to like see some of my art and research sort of more at the center of my life. And that's been feeling good and been feeling like a win. And I think it's still like revealing itself for how it'll show up in my like quote business or, you know, how I make money. But I think that, yeah, I think a lot about like, you know, I have 5 planets in Gemini and definitely am a shapeshifter and like just really mutable. And I'm always sort of, and being non-binary and queer, I think I'm just always sort of like moving between things. And I feel like I want more people to like be able to access that if they want to, because I think that there's definitely a freedom in sort of being like, I'm going to work on quilts now, or I'm going to write now, or I'm going to make a dance now, or I'm going to read now. Like, I really like, you know, being able to sort of bounce between things. And, you know, I think to some people it looks scattered, but to me it's just like really being in sort of the flow of things. And it was interesting though, because my name change it was outside of that. Like, it was so much harder than when I changed my pronouns or when I changed other things. I don't know. Like, it had maybe because of the like professional weight, I think, but it definitely, yeah, was harder than other shifts I've made.
Mm-hmm. When I really relate to that, I'm also Gemini Sun over here. But yeah, I like to do a lot of different, you know, things, learn about all different things and have different roles, have different interests. But I think the question is, and I know you don't necessarily have an answer to this, but, you know, there's very much like this kind of bind between, right, like capitalism and making a living and then being able to evolve and being able to change and being able to reinvent. I think that you know, I would guess a lot of people listening relate to your impulse to want to do different things and to want to be able to show up in different ways. But I feel like the question is really like, and, you know, how do I reconcile that with needing to make money or needing to run a business? And so I'm curious how that's kind of showing up for you or how you're thinking about that now or just how you're like wrestling with that right now.
Yeah. I mean, that was probably my number one question was like, can I change my name and will people specifically like still open my newsletter? You know, they're going to see a totally new name. Are they going to read the newsletter where I say that I have a different name? Like, are they going to still sign up for my classes? And, you know, so far have I done something yet? Yes. I just started my new season of my co-working group, Flexible Office, and saw a normal amount of signups, you know? So, you know, things seem to be on track to stay in business, but I definitely am nervous about, you know, I'm about to sell my next book. My proposal is ready and, you know, it'll be my third published book by a publisher. And I am a little nervous. I am a little nervous that even if they, you know, they'll know who it is. Like they'll be able to see my old name and see the other books I've written and how they've done. But I am curious, like, is there going to be a fear that, you know, this book is sort of like, there is a book in between, but it is sort of an extension of How to Not Always Be Working a little bit, which mm-hmm. did well. And there is a fear that they're going to maybe not give me as big of an advance as I might want, or that they're not going to work as hard to sell it or whatever, because it doesn't have Marley Grace on the cover. And so maybe that's part of like the chrysalis too, is like, I am, you know, it's only been since January. So I am still sort of feeling out like, has this affected my income? You know, I started school at the same time. So I sort of like took a little bit of a break from teaching. So quarter one earnings are a little lower than they were last year anyways. And so I am adjusting a little bit to what's been coming up. And I think that was a little bit of the like, and I want to be clear, like I have an enormous amount of debt. I don't have any savings and I don't. So like I made the jump to my name change, you know, without like a net, mm-hmm. for better or worse. So I think that I share that just to say, I think it really was that kind of feeling of like, it was just too uncomfortable to use my old name. So yeah, there is some, I'm definitely like, there are some questions of like how it's all settling, how the dust is all settling after the name change.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think somewhere at kind of the root of everything that we're talking about is this idea of consistency and this mm-hmm. idea that one needs to continue and continue and continue to show up in, you know, a specific and consistent sort of way. And then for anyone who creates content, I don't like that word, but it's sort of unavoidable at this point, right? For anyone who creates content on social media or on Substack or with a podcast or with any other medium, there's this kind of extreme cultural pressure to, you know, to produce that content and to continue doing that social media performance consistently and at this very regular rhythm, you know, and this kind of feeling that if you're not producing and producing and producing, like that if the music stops, it's all maybe going to fall apart. And I think there's this immense pressure that we all feel, real or not, to kind of feed content to our audiences and at regular intervals and kind of show up in this, you know, this kind of linear lockstep consistency, which I think, you know, at times is really at odds with kind of the natural rhythms of making art or being a creative person. You know, sometimes you just
need to take a week off, or maybe you need to take a few months off, or you know, maybe you need to take a year off to kind of help your brain get to a new place. But I think that feels really at odds with the way that creative people exist in this economy. You know, and I say that acknowledging that to even be able to make a living through one's creativity is such a gift and a privilege in and of itself. But I'm curious, like, how you think about that, that tension between kind of consistently, like, showing up really consistently as an online, you know, persona and, like, delivering content versus, like, allowing yourself to have time and space to have new thoughts and to explore new rhythms.
I don't know why. I was going to say, what are new thoughts? Like, I'm just like, I'm so, I mean, that is where, like, I'm so online. Like, even if I take long breaks from Instagram, I'm still sending, I mean, my newsletter is really where I so rarely take a break. Mm-hmm. And I kind of don't mind because I sort of like tailor what, like, the newsletter, I give myself permission to put anything I want in the newsletter. So, like, when I was, like, going through a breakup a couple years ago, I think I like scribbled something in, like, my notebook, took a picture of it and sent it out as the newsletter that Monday. Like, I really let myself write what needs to be written sort of within the cycle. But yeah, I really feel the, I mean, it's sort of part of why I took a pause from making a podcast, because it felt like I couldn't, it was so much to make a podcast and have the weekly newsletter. I felt like I would have maybe needed to shift to, like, have an every other week podcast or a once a month podcast with an every other week newsletter or something. As I'm saying this out loud, I'm like, maybe I'll just do that. But so yeah, there was a time last year where I, like, really burnt myself out a little bit, like, really hustling on my podcast, which I love. I love doing. I love podcasting. I love interviewing people. I love talking to myself and then to the microphone. But it was like doing the podcast, doing the newsletter, teaching a ton. It just was too much. And it made me not really like my job. And that felt sad because, like you just said, it is an immense privilege to get to do my job. I feel so, so lucky. I love my job. But it felt like, it felt sort of like a lot of looking at myself, and I needed a little bit of a break from that. And so I pivoted and ended up teaching this writing class last winter, I guess. And that felt amazing. So, you know, it is that, like, that constant sort of pivoting that can happen. But yeah, I am, you know, and this year I took a break from writing for free for a while on my newsletter and experimented with just going behind the paywall, which I liked in some ways, but in other ways didn't really. So I do try to, like, experiment with, like, what's my capacity and where and how do I want to show up? But I don't think I've taken a full month off of public sharing in 10 years, 12 years.
Mm. So yeah.
Something to think about.
It is something to think about. I'm curious if you want to say more about this idea of permission as kind of a release gasket in a world where we feel compelled to show up consistently. You know, as I was listening to you, I was kind of thinking about the phrase, like, consistently inconsistent. You know, it's like, okay, well, I'm going to show up and I'm going to write, but, like, I'm going to allow myself to be kind of inconsistent in how I, like, portray myself in that writing, or I'm going to give myself permission to be inconsistent in that. And, you know, I'm just kind of thinking about, like, people who are listening, who are kind of in that bind of, like, okay, like, I, you know, I produce this type of content, or I show up in this way, and I can't really change that, or I don't really want to change that, but how can I kind of create room for more fluidity or more creativity within those constraints? And yeah, I'm curious if you want to say more about that, or just kind of thinking about this idea of permission.
You know, the thing that I want to say is, which I think applies to so much of what we've been talking about, is like, no one is thinking about us as much as we are thinking about us and what we yeah. do, you know? And I say that to my students all the time who are writers who really want to launch a newsletter, and they're like, but what if the subtitle is this? And then I want to do this. And I'm like, then you'll change it and probably one person will notice. Like, and everybody else will be like, oh, cool new subtitle, moving on. Like, no one is thinking like, whoa, Cody's into quilts, but they also dance and do this thing and do this thing. Or if they are thinking that, that's just not my people. I think when people are looking for that permission to like shift and change, is to remember it's like, it feels so big to us and to other people. Like there was a, like one group of people I was really nervous to tell about my name change were like some of my 12-step fellows, just like generationally being different and like mm-hmm. maybe a little more conservative, and like just people I've known for literally 13 years as Marley, and just being like, they're going to be so weirded out and they're just going to think I'm crazy. And I would like, I texted some of them, or like, you know, told them at the meeting, and everybody was literally just like, we love you. Like, I feel I'm going to cry now just saying it. It was like, no one, I just felt so loved, and it was, and I have been lucky to feel that through most of the big changes that I've gone through, is people usually are just like, great, we love you. Sounds good. And then they're on to their next thing. And so, yeah, I feel like whether you're changing the name of your newsletter or your book or something along the way, or your name, or my big thing recently was I made this huge announcement that I was going to quit Instagram, and then I like started using it again. So it's like, you know, it's just the pivoting happens, and we go on, and people aren't really thinking about us as much as we think they are. So it's a good thing.
Yes, I think that is a great corrective. It was something that I think about a lot, probably more in my personal life when I'm, you know, anxiety looping on something. Yes. And it's like, oh, right, everyone else is focused on themselves and whatever is going on in their life in the yes. same way that I'm focused on this problem for me. And they're really not spending that much time thinking exactly. about it.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think about that a lot too with my newsletter delivery time. Sometimes I'm like, it's going to be a day late. And it's like, literally no one is like tapping their watch, like, Thursday, where's Jocelyn in my inbox?
yes, exactly.
Speaking of Instagram, Yeah, it was interesting. You were just kind of writing about your relationship to Instagram and recent newsletter piece. And it felt like there was kind of a softening around how you were relating to it. Like, you know, you had been like, I'm emphatically off Instagram, or, you know, it felt like there was a sort of emphatically on or emphatically off.
Yeah.
And it feels like your perspective shifted to, you know, something more like, well, I'll see what feels right, you know, on a month by month basis. Yeah. I'm curious how your thoughts are evolving around social media specifically, and this kind of idea of like renouncing it or embracing it, or even if that's showing up like with other mediums as well.
Yeah. You know, I'm tempted to, I have a sentence that wants to come out of my mouth and I can feel myself like trying to censor it. But what I would like to say is I hate it there. I really just hate social media, but I also find pleasure in using it sometimes. But it was pretty quickly when I started using it again this year that I was like, this is not good for my brain. Like, even though I feel so like defended against the like what it's designed to do algorithmically to me, like, and I'm like, you can't upset me. I know that you're only going to give me 100 likes for this post about my co-working group, you know, and you'll give me 3,000 when it's a selfie about something else. You know, I know how it works, and it just, the reality is, like, it still bums me out. Like, I do still get bummed when I do post about the offerings that I have for the world. And, you know, when I first started using it, when I would post my offerings to the world, it reached everyone who followed me, and it just doesn't work like that anymore. So I feel, I think in general, you know, this is why I tell everyone to start, you know, an email newsletter, something that I know you are passionate about as well. And, because it is why I still have a job, just straight up factually. Not just because my Substack makes money, but because it's where I promote, you know, my offerings, and it's how people sign up for my classes and the Zoom rooms I facilitate. But, I feel like right now social media just feels really loud in there. It just feels loud. And I think, what I'm noticing is, like, even if I can kind of use it quick and, like, kind of dip in and out, it's still, like, even a little bit of scrolling really affects my sensitive little brain.
Yeah, I feel exactly the same. So nice. Maybe we can loop back to, because it feels like it's coming up and coming up and coming up, is this idea of the online self and this wish to perhaps reject the online self. It's certainly something that I can relate to. I'm sure that many people can relate to it as well. There's kind of been this theme in what you've been talking about of kind of, you know, arriving at a point of such great discomfort that you have to make a change, right? Which is, I think, how change happens for most humans. I guess I'm just curious to go a little bit more into that, how you're thinking about your online self, and is there a possibility of divesting from it? Is it kind of in just the, you know, the sort of like wishful fantasy phase? Is it something that you are really actively thinking about trying to do in a real way, or just kind of what's kind of coming up around that?
Yeah. You know, I was just talking to Amelia Hruby, who has the podcast Off the Grid. And I was sort of saying to her, like, I wonder if I just had a business, if I would maybe have left Instagram and stayed off Instagram. But I feel like the public persona part of me, and the part that really likes being me online, like, likes the feedback, like, likes to be in touch with the people and to, like, sort of tether in to my community. I think especially living rurally in a small town, like, it's really where I find connection to my people and see what they're doing and see what they're up to and say what I'm up to. And yeah, we were just having the conversation because Amelia is really also an example of someone who had a very, like, personal brand Instagram, and then left Instagram and started her business editing podcasts and having her own podcast, and really left behind, like, yeah, the persona. And so I think I am asking myself that, especially in school right now. I am, like, wondering who, and I do find, like, sometimes I go to call what I do, I'm doing air quotes, Marley Grace, because that feels like the name of the job. right? But like I don't, like, I stumble when I go to call the name of the job Cody Cook Parrott, because I do feel this, like, which this is sort of the first time I'm saying this out loud, but I do feel this separation of Cody and this sort of job of myself. Like, I feel like Cody is like stepping in for Marley or something and like being like, we'll try to write some Marley Grace essays here, but like something else is happening and I don't know what it is yet. I just see that there's something here that wants to be sort of unwound about the self in the digital space. So, I mean, this goes back to being like, can I just sell quilts out of a farm stand? I don't think I can make, if I'm going to be transparent about numbers and online business, I don't think I can make a six-figure income from quilts in a farm stand, in a roadside stand. But maybe there's an adjustment there too to my income. I don't know. So more will be revealed, I suppose.
Well, and it's interesting what you're saying. I think it sounds like thinking about this aspect that there's sort of a double-edged sword to this idea of being a personal brand, which is you get to be known as yourself. And so you get to relate to people as yourself. And that can be really beautiful and nourishing to have people know things about you and to get to show up in spaces as you and to get to have exchanges with them. And that can be really beautiful. And then there's another side where it's there. On the flip side, there can be a feeling of a sense of like a pressure to show up in some way. And again, with that kind of like thread of consistency coming in that we were talking about, which I think is interesting. And I want to kind of come back to the Cody doing Marley's job, because that's kind of linked to another question that I wanted to ask. But before we get there, I'm curious if there is anyone kind of coming back and touching into this idea of showing up consistently and ways to kind of play with that so that you know, we have to show up consistently. Like, we need to do that to kind of support ourselves, but are there kind of little trapdoors or, you know, ways of giving ourselves permission or other things that we can do to kind of support more expansiveness or more fluidity? I'm curious if there's anyone who you think is addressing that in an interesting way, maybe showing up outside of the normal ways in which creatives show up in this economy and doing that kind of consistency in a way that seems to be working for them, or that are just kind of throwing consistency out the window in a way that's really working for them. Who's kind of inspiring you with their creativity and their fluidity?
That's a great question. Someone who I really love is the artist Tamara Santibanez, and they are a tattoo artist, but also a painter and a ceramicist, and also have a Substack, and just an amazing activist, someone doing a lot of organizing right now. And I think of them because they're just another person who like really sort of like writes their newsletter when they feel called to write their newsletter. And like, I see them sort of be like, all right, like, I'm going to focus more on my paintings for the show. Or then see them be like, you know what, I like want to take more tattoo work on right now, or I want to work on this book. They're also an amazing oral historian. Like, you know, they're just someone who I really see working in many different mediums, really being an amazing artist and just person in the world. And yeah, they're definitely someone I look to also like give myself permission to rest or push it a little bit.
Well, and that brings me back to, is this a false assumption? Is consistency really necessary in the ways that we are perhaps conditioned to think that it is so?
You know, I stay consistent with my newsletter for myself. And I think that if I started getting caught up in it being consistent for the reader, I think it would cause me a lot of stress. But it's like, I want to write every Monday, whether I want to or not. Like, I want to show up to the page every Monday and report to the people what's happening. Like, that is such an amazing practice for me and my creative spirit and my life. And in turn, it seems to work for the people, for the readers. But I think if I started like to feel like, oh man, they need this every single Monday, like it would just feel like such a pressure, which I think I experienced a little bit with my podcast. I was like, I said this comes out every Wednesday, so it needs to come out every Wednesday. And I think, you know, I think it, you're such a great example of like moving from the weekly to the monthly and, you know, slowing down with the podcast output. And I feel like I had a really hard time just shifting how often. And so I just like stopped doing it. And yeah, it was sort of like, if I can't do this in this consistent way I want to or think people need it. But I think it's the same advice I just gave. It's like, I don't think anybody's like, great, Cody didn't put their podcast on again this week. I think they're just like, great, another episode of Common Shapes is out, you know? And so, yeah, I do think, I think that when, if consistency like feels good to you, do consistency. But if it doesn't feel good and you feel like you're doing it for other people, I think that's where it should be looked at a little closer, like the intention behind the consistency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it feels like this idea of really anchoring into your own agency and orienting from an internal place rather than an external place is what really kind of influences that. Yeah. So to come back to the kind of that interesting little sort of Cody showing up for Marley's job piece that we were getting into in a moment, one of the things that has been interesting to me as I contemplate, again, this idea of changing my name is that when I think about, well, what does insert new name want to do? Like, what does Dusty want to do? To be clear, Dusty is not my new chosen name. But as an example, when I think about like, well, what does Dusty want to do? Like, Dusty doesn't want to do the same things that Jocelyn wants to do, which I'm finding really interesting. Like the thought experiment, because for me, that's what it is at this point. The thought experiment of taking on a new name seems to start to open up new possibilities and shine a light on what is currently perhaps being suppressed or neglected in me, which is really interesting. And I'm curious if any of that resonates with you. Like, does Cody want to do different things that you didn't feel free to explore under your previous name?
Yeah, I think Cody wants to be off the internet way more. Like, I think Cody really wants to be like in my small town. Like, I got like a studio in town, you know, in my little, my town is one block long, you know, with like a couple storefronts and a post office and a convenience store. And, you know, I feel like I just love like being in town and seeing who stops by the studio. And, you know, like that's like, yeah, Cody wants to be like a worker amongst workers and just like be around town and be in the garden. And I think it just really is this like, kind of putting Marley Grace to rest of this, just like really like aligning with this version of myself that was just like so online and shared so much. And I think, yeah, like I think when I'm like designing a class, like I'm teaching a new quilt class in a couple weeks, I think before my quilt class sort of felt like it did revolve around like my ideas around quilting or something. And this class just feels like, I don't even think anyone would necessarily notice a difference in like what the sales page is like or anything, but it's like, as I'm developing its curriculum, I'm just really centering quilts as the center. Mm. And so, yeah, I think there is something about like Cody wants like a different radius of energy and just like thinking about like my house and my friends and my private life and yeah, like what does life offline really look like is a question I'm asking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it sounds like being, much more embedded in where you are.
Yeah. Yeah.
In like community that. And physical space and so forth. What would you say is a kind of growth edge for you right now in relation to how you're showing up for your creative practice? What are you kind of bumping up against or experimenting with?
I'm feeling, you know, this is sort of a maybe a strange answer, but what's coming to me is actually it's more about the digital creative space, which is making me want to continue to embed more in my real life outside of it. But is like a growth edge I'm coming up against is like being really affected by online metrics. And I used to not ever care like what my like open rate was for my newsletter or how many clicks it got. Like I somehow managed to like never really care or pay attention. Like I just was like, you know what? My job is working. So why would I look at that stuff? And lately I've just been like checking it and it's lower than it used to be. And it didn't happen right after my name change. It sort of happened a little bit after that, but so it doesn't seem to line up with that, but it's, and even just like using Instagram again, like just, you know, the reality is that like a couple years ago when I would post in stories, like 11,000 people would usually like see my first couple stories, and now it's like 900. And that just affects me. Like, I'm just not going to lie. Like, it affects my, not my self-esteem or my self-worth. I mean, I think it just kind of makes me sad that like my work used to be able to reach more people and it just doesn't anymore. And there is maybe like a loneliness in that, but I think that's where like, you know, the area that I live in, the population is like many, there's many thousands of people where I live, but technically the town I live in is population 102. And I really like thinking about like, how can I be just in community with those 100 and I guess maybe I'm 101 people. And so, yeah, I think that's maybe my growth edge right now is like how I dare I say this strange sentence, which has never come out of my mouth, but like what would it mean to be a local artist? Like sometimes I go in the bookstore and like my books are there, but I'm not in like the local author section, you know, like I'm like, do I want to be like, I'm not writing books about Michigan. It's like most of the local author section is like Michigan, stories of Michigan. But still like I've always sort of felt this wherever I live. Like I'm sort of this like internet person that happens to live in small towns instead of like a small town person who happens to be on the internet. There we go. So I'm trying to like switch my order up a little bit. I'm really finding out a lot about myself here with you today. This is great.
Well, it's interesting what's coming up. You know, I was listening to you say that. I was thinking about, you know, and this idea of like, oh, I didn't used to be affected by these analytics, but like now I'm really, you know, kind of getting a little activated by them and a little engaged with them in a way that I don't feel comfortable with, is just thinking about how, you know, we make certain changes in our life. Like, let's say we stop drinking, or maybe we start working with certain plants, or, you know, maybe we change our diet. And these things really have a huge impact on how we perceive the world and the level of sensitivity that we bring to our interactions with the world. And that then we, at least for me, I don't always kind of remember like, oh, I might be more sensitive to this, to check in with that. You know, I might be more sensitive to this thing than I was before. So for instance, you know, that, and that thing could be Instagram. Like, you know, I know that like if I spend any amount of time on Instagram, I just become like extremely dysregulated, you know, and if I look at it like before bed, then there's just, I, I'm going to need like a whole 45 to 60 minute like session in order to like reconstitute myself before I could actually go to sleep. And yeah, I think we, you know, just culturally, sensitivity is such a negative thing in our society and we kind of tend to push it away. But it's also just coming to me thinking about this idea of that we need to kind of constantly check back in on our sensitivities in relation to things and really honor those and not just assume that everything is going to always continue to impact or affect us in the same way.
Yeah. I'm
curious how that lands for you.
Yeah, I feel like for me, like embarrassment comes up when I feel like I know a lot about something and it still affects me. Like I'm like, I don't want to be sensitive about Instagram. Like I know how this works. I know what they're doing to me. And so then I'm like, feel like I shouldn't be sensitive to it or something. Mm. Like because I understand how it's designed. Yeah. And yeah, the reality is I am really sensitive to it. And I'm not in certain ways with my newsletter. I mean, it's where like politically values aligned, I show up a lot clearer in my newsletter because I'm not dysregulated, you know, and activated. I'm really thoughtful and clear and can say what I mean and what I think and or go back the next week and be like, you know what, I think something different this week and want to rearrange what I said before. And I can do that there because I don't have the urgency. And I think that is the thing about social media is it feels so urgent. And I actually think it does a disservice to moments of actual urgency when like the world does need us because it's so fast. And so, yeah, I am really sensitive to that. And yeah, definitely walk through the world trying to mask my sensitivity. I mean, you know, I'm bipolar and have ADHD and definitely live in a world where I try to mask those things and want to seem professional and, or sometimes, you know, I'm really public about both of those diagnoses, but also there's certain times where I might feel more sensitive to someone knowing it or something, if it's a new person in my life or feeling like the stigma that comes around it. And so I share those just to say, like, those are also things that make me really sensitive to, like, that rejection, feeling of rejection or feeling of euphoria. Like, those are just heightened for me when I experience them, which social media creates.
So. Mm, yeah. Yeah. Well, I think I like what you're saying about kind of, you know, the way that Instagram impacts you versus the way that, you know, showing up for your newsletter impacts you. And I think when we tune into those sensitivities and we honor them, then we can, you know, maybe make better choices about which technologies we want to interface with and which technologies we want to show up in that are going to allow us to get out of that extremely disturbing, toxic urgency that you're describing. Yeah. So one last question, if you could ask the folks listening to reflect on a question related to how they do or do not think about themselves as a personal brand or as a creative person, what question would you ask them to sit with?
Who do you want to be to your neighbor? That's my question. Mm. Who do you want to be to your neighbor?
Do you want to say anything else about that?
I just think a lot about Don and Terry, who are my two neighbors across the street. And, you know, they're just gun-toting hunter, Republican, old guys, old white, cis, straight guys. They've been best friends since they were like 15. They live next door to each other. And I just love them. Like, they're just such good neighbors to me. And you know, out in the world, we'd never be friends. But I think that's so funny. I like ran into one of them the other day and I was like, hey, like, you know, I told the whole internet, but I actually kept meaning to tell you and Don, like, I changed my name to Cody. And it was kind of just like this. Terry was like, all right. Like, it was just so like, sounds good. Like, I don't care. Like, it was just this like beautiful, there's like this whole other kind of acceptance that happens from people like that who are just like, you're just my wild, crazy neighbor who lives across the street by themselves. You know, it's like, they don't understand that like I'm non-binary or that why I changed my name. And, but I just think of them because I love when we run into each other at the mailbox or see each other around. And it just really does like they, I'm going to use Marley Grace as the job again, but it's like, they don't care about Marley Grace. They don't care about Cody Cook Parrott. It's like they, just, yeah, who am I to my neighbor is so beautiful. It's like really my essence. It's like really my, like who I am at the mailbox is not who I am on Instagram. It's a different person.
Thank you. Well, I'm not sure that we solved the question of how to navigate the inherent strangeness of being a personal brand in the world today, but we definitely delved a little bit deeper into the discomfort and the challenges of it. And hopefully our investigation surfaced some new perspectives and or maybe some good questions to ask for you. If you want to learn more about Cody, their art, their writing, and their offerings, I have put all of the relevant links to their digital world in the show notes. If you dig this podcast and you're not already on my newsletter list, I would invite you to please join me. I would love to have you. Every other week, I send out a thoughtful essay reflecting on creativity and consciousness, as well as a bunch of highly, highly, highly curated links to thought-provoking articles and podcasts. And I also share details about new offerings that I have as they arrive. You can subscribe to that newsletter at my personal website at jkg.co. And right now, as I mentioned at the top of the episode, I am just about to launch this really fun new creative incubator called Kiln, which is basically for anyone who has any type of creative project or endeavor that they are feeling really ready to commit to. And you can bring that project into the space, you can find accountability, you can find community, you can find support, and it's going to be a space for you to really commit to a regular rhythm of working on that project so that it can really blossom. And that might be a creative project, it might be a business idea, it might be reinventing your career, it might be reconnecting with your creative practice. If you have creative ideas that need fire and momentum, Kiln is the place to bring them. And registration for the spring cycle is still open for just a few more days through this Saturday, April 20th. And you can learn more at jkg.co/kiln. That's K-I-L-N. All right, that is all that I have got for you today. As always, thank you so much for your time, for your attention, and please remember to hurry slowly.